wish all 16 clubs participating in the draft lottery good luck, and let's get this underway. First overall selection in the 2022 NHL Draft belongs to the Montreal Canadiens.
Right shot center was given exceptional status in the Ontario Hockey League, and it has been a roller coaster ride.
He's a minor hockey phenom. 150 points in 72 games.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Five Hole Fantasy Hockey Podcast. I'm your host today, TJ Branson. We've got the Dynasty Series. It is starting today with none other than Scott Wheeler from The Athletic. We're going to be talking 2022 draft class. We're going to be talking about some NHL prospects that are already in systems, some storylines, actually, which is interesting with some of these NHL prospects. Ilya Konovalov in Edmonton, you know, he's signing with Dynamo in the KHL. I want to get a read for what's going on there. You know, Samuel Hellenius, I want to get a feel for Jack Dugan. Maybe some other sneak peek at who could be the Calder favorites for next year, which might translate to you guys that are in redrafts that might not play in a dynasty league. But mostly this series is catered to those of us that don't have an off season, those dynasty nuts out there. Off season is time for wheeling and dealing, all that kind of stuff. We're going to deep dive into the 2022 draft class over the next 3 weeks now. We've got a series of experts coming on the show. First off is Scott from The Athletic, fresh off a top 100 prospects article that you guys should definitely check out. So I want to get to this interview as soon as possible. Let's hop right into it. Enjoy. Scott, welcome to the show, man. It's a pleasure to have you here for, 3 years in a row. So thanks a lot for coming back. I'm going to be totally honest with you here. This is not a draft class that I'm super knowledgeable about. So I'm going to be taking a ride here with the listeners as well. This is going to be a learning experience for me as well. So today what we want to do is become more informed about this year's draft class, the top end talent, late round gems, if you know of any, and peripheral specialists. Like we like those hits, those blocks, those shots. Anybody that's going to be big on the power play is going to be big for us. So Scott, why don't you let everybody know where they can find you, what they can click on, what they can read?
Yeah, at Scott C. Wheeler on Twitter. And then as far as my coverage, it's all at The Athletic. My top 100 prospects for the 2022 NHL draft came out last week. This week, my mock draft just rolled out about a few hours before we're recording this conversation here. Got lots more coming. Obviously, grades and winners and losers and all that will happen on the day one and day two of the draft. But this is the home stretch for me. This is the final push into the draft season. So looking forward to just getting to Montreal at this point.
Yeah, you get to be in person this year. I know last year was when we spoke, it was a little bit, you know, you had your reservations about maybe the, you know, not in person, but you said that the video and being able to rely on you know, services that had everybody curate, you know, one prospect's, like, a lot of video, and maybe that was a little more refreshing. Do you find yourself pretty stoked about this year? Montreal's got the number one pick. I mean, that's poetic.
Yeah, it's going to be great. It's been 3 years now. The last two drafts have been held at their NHL studios in Secaucus, New Jersey there. So it's been a while. I miss being in, I mean, previously the last two drafts prior were Vancouver and Dallas, and just getting down there, the buzz of the weekend, seeing all of my colleagues. We use it at The Athletic as a summit, if you will. It's the only event of the year that all of our writers attend, and they typically bring people up from headquarters to speak with us and that kind of thing. So you end up with 50, 60, 70 people from The Athletic there, which is a lot of fun as well. And not just fun, but just the work that gets done that we're always really proud of. And this is one of those events that really showcases what The Athletic is all about. So can't wait to get to Montreal. And Montreal, just for completely selfish reasons, is easily a top five, top 10 city in the NHL. So love being there.
My wife and I, we've been there twice, and it was January and February that we went. So I'd love to get there during the summer. I'll be envious of you for that one. So with a caveat now that a lot of things are going to change, and stay tuned into Scott's work with after the draft, because where these kids go is going to maybe like slightly change the outcome or move the needle a certain way. Like there's got to be players that have a perfect fit in a system, and maybe they get drafted that way. Maybe they go somewhere that, you know, doesn't exactly fit. Like one of these top D-men getting stuck behind Rasmus Dahlin and Owen Power might not be the best landing spot for them fantasy-wise. Mm-hmm. As a team, that makes a ton of sense. So just to start from the top, paint with a wide brush here, this 2022 draft class, how do you compare it to the ones that we've seen these past few years and maybe the ones that we will see in the next few years?
Well, I would say it's about an average draft. It fits in more or less with most of the drafts of the last few years. It's been a string of drafts here, though, that haven't really got the NHL scouting community all that excited. You really have to go back to 2015 for a draft class that was uniformly just beloved and had everybody really amped up about. This draft isn't that. And as I kind of alluded to, there's been a few of those now. Next year's draft is, though. 2023 and 2015 are really the two sort of generational drafts that I've covered. This is my ninth year. Next year covering the 2023 draft will be my 10th year covering the draft. And those are certainly the two best crops that I've ever evaluated. Obviously, it's still very early for the 2023 group, but 2023 and 2015 were special. And this group this year in 2022 is somewhere in between. I've soured on my excitement level on the kids at the top of the draft, the very sort of first four or five kids off the board. I like them, but I don't love them. Where this draft is interesting for me is that it actually does have surprising depth. There were more players than typical that I considered for my first round, and certainly more players than typical that I considered for my sort of top 64 of that top 100. So I guess the top two rounds. This draft really ran about 90 players deep for me on my board, and typically that number is about 10 smaller than that. So when I release my rankings, there's usually a pretty steep drop off at 80, and then I'm just kind of filling in the 80 to 100 range of my board with players of moderate or even peripheral interest. So for that group to be a little bit bigger than usual helps bring this draft back up after I soured a little bit on some of the kids at the very, very top.
Do you see this as a draft class where quantity might beat out quality?
Potentially, yes. I do think there are going to be very, very talented players available on day two. There always is, but this year in particular, as I put together my mock draft before it came out today, and as I've sort of spoken with NHL clubs, I think there are going to be players ranked in the likely multiple players ranked in the teens on my board who are going to be available with picks 30, 40, 50, that kind of a thing. There's a lot of divergence on this draft, and I think where the quantity question really comes into play is just that, frankly, there hasn't been as much of a book that has been developed on these kids. This is another draft that's going to have been sort of looked back upon 5-10 years from now for its pandemic impact, right? This is a draft class where a lot of these kids didn't play a proper 16-year-old season. And then this year, when scouts were sort of watching them, instead of being in their second years at their junior or respective pro levels, many of them, a lot of them, were rookies. They were having to navigate going into their leagues and playing in a season that is also their draft season and doing it as a rookie. So that has made things more difficult for teams. There's just less information. There's less data on a lot of these kids just because they haven't played as many games as you typically see them play. So that's going to make it tricky, and I suspect that's where quantity will be valuable, is can you find the guys, the hidden gems in rounds 2, 3, 4 that will likely be there because other teams just don't have a great book on them.
I could see this and last year's draft both having, like, you know, 5 years from now, we see guys are coming out of the 4th, 5th, and, you know, later even being some of the best that came out of this class just for that exact reason.
Definitely.
Let's go straight into, you know, maybe the top end, because that's where I would think we would find some of these guys. Who out of this class do you see being NHL ready?
Well, I think two players are going to play in the NHL next year for sure. Maybe not for sure, but I expect that Shane Wright and Juraj Slafkovský, who will also both be two of the first three, maybe even the first two picks off the board. I expect that both Slafkovský and Wright will play in the NHL next year. I think there's a small chance that Shane Wright goes back to Kingston for one more season and plays at the World Juniors and goes on a run in Kingston and tries to become the 110, 120 point player that he didn't become at that level this year. But I think the more likely outcome for Shane is that whichever team drafts him, which is probably going to be Montreal, he's inserted directly into the lineup. He plays well enough in camp to earn a roster spot on a rebuilding team, and they sort of do trial by fire with him, where they maybe even play him as high as their second line center role behind Nick Suzuki, because there just isn't a lot there in Montreal to work with. So two very different outcomes, but I think there's a real chance that Shane Wright is a second or third line center in Montreal next year. And then just kind of takes his career and goes from there. And then Slafkovský, I think because of the success he's had at Men's Worlds, because of the success he's had at the Olympics, those two things are going to make it hard for teams. I think teams are very encouraged by both of those things, and it will be hard as a result to keep him out of the NHL. He played better than NHL players at both of those events. So, I think those two for sure. And then I do think that the two defensemen are interesting. There are two top D at the top of this class, Simon Nemets and David Jiříček. Both play over in Europe, Jiříček in the Czech Republic and Nemets in Slovakia. I expect that Nemets for sure will come over next year. And whether he plays in the AHL or NHL is obviously to be determined. But another player with a ton of pro experience who I think could play in an NHL roster without much trouble. So he's probably the third Nemets that I would, if I had to pick three, he'd probably be the third that I'd project into an NHL lineup. And then after that, it gets pretty difficult. I wouldn't be completely stunned if Matt Savoy or one of the other sort of forward prospects, particularly out of the junior hockey here, because a lot of the kids who are assigned in Europe are just going to play over there. And likewise with Logan Cooley playing in college. But the junior kids over here, there's typically one that always surprises. Last year it was Cole Sillinger working his way into the Columbus Blue Jackets roster as the youngest player. So youngest player in the NHL, that is, last year. So maybe there's a guy like that. I would maybe handicap Matt Savoy is having the greatest odds, but Matt's a player who dealt with an injury late this season to his shoulder and is probably best served to also go back. So if anything, I think the big two plus maybe defender Simon Nemec, those are probably the three to look out for.
So with so many players coming from the same team, looking at the USNTDP, Zhu Gardens, you know, these players are playing with each other. They're all kind of a rising tide lifts all boats is what I'm basically kind of circling mm-hmm. here is, do you see any of these prospects maybe going into a new system? Do you see any of them that their value or their skills might get diluted without that continuity amongst line mates and teammates?
Yeah. There's always a question with especially the NTDP kids, but this year also with Djurgården, because they're going to have three first rounders, there's always a question of who's the sheep, right? Who's being herded? Who's the player that we're going to look back on 5-10 years from now, and it's going to be revealed that they were a good player, but that they were playing with better players and that they were being brought along and made to look better than they are. And that's true of the NTDP every single year. There's only so much power play time that can go around there, and the kids that are on the two power play units typically look better statistically. And we often have kids on the power play units who then sort of bottom out when they don't get that kind of usage in college. And then we have kids who aren't on the power play units who always surprise people with their talent level and are revealed to be better than people thought they were because they weren't getting those opportunities. And now suddenly you're playing on a college team and maybe you do. So that's interesting. I think in this draft, people look at that first line of the program, for example, and they look at Cutter Gauthier and Logan Cooley and Jimmy Snuggerud, and the instinct is to believe that Cooley, with all of his skill and pace and talent and scrappiness, and Cutter Gauthier with his pro-built game, those two were the drivers, and Jimmy Snuggerud was riding shotgun. And so there's those kinds of conversations that are happening amongst NHL clubs. And then obviously the same is true of Noah Ostlin, Liam Ogren, and Jonathan Lekarmäki, the three kids who played on the same line for much of this year with Djurgården's junior team. So it's going to be interesting because that team in Djurgården was demoted this year. They are moving down from the SHL to the second tier Hockey Allsvenskan. And I actually think that will be good for the three of them, because instead of one of them getting an opportunity with an SHL club due to depth, all three of them are going to play and potentially even play on the power play and play in prominent roles at the second tier pro level next year. And I think that will be very good for each of them. So Those are three players who I think are all talented in their own merit. And then with the national program, it can be a little trickier to snuff out who's carrying a line and who isn't.
That's going to be interesting to watch next year. All right, with the top picks here, it's confusing because these tiers, they're so wide. And I'm just curious, is that something you agree with? Like, there's a lot of disparity between, your projections as far as the top prospects and, you know, the next player or the next projectors. There is a lot of disparity. I'm seeing guys like, you know, Gleb Trikazov. Sometimes he's, you know, in the top 20 and, you know, you click a different link and he's just outside the top 50. So there's a lot of disparity. Is it, beauty's in the eye of the beholder a little bit, depending on who's evaluating or what is causing all this sorts of disparity?
Well, I think part of it is, again, that lost year that we have, and that is creating more disparity in this draft class than is typical. Part of it is, you're absolutely right, different evaluators look for different things and see different things and project forward players into different types of roles and just view the game trending in directions that don't always align with one another. But then part of it, I mean, is just the specifics as well. Like, for example, with a player like Gleb, part of the reason he's lower on my board is because I tried to build my board similar to how NHL clubs are building them, not to say that it's predictive of them or some kind of a mock draft. It's not. It's still very much my own opinions. But the reality for NHL clubs is that with the Russians, those kids are going to fall. And because of the uncertainty around the invasion of Ukraine and control that may be a factor in terms of whether these Russian kids who are playing over there can come over here freely and come play in the CHL if they want to, or the communication lines between NHL clubs and them over the course of this season and their absence at the combine, all of those things are going to result in players like Gleb going lower than where he should on talent. And Gleb, for me, would have been in the early 30s, i.e. late first round or early second round for me on just talent alone. But because of all of the external factors, I just felt like I had to treat it the way an NHL club would treat it, which is drop him as far as you're comfortable before the gap between him and the next player is so pronounced that you wouldn't be able to pass on him. So that's kind of what I did. If he was even close to the players in his range, I tended to just move them ahead of him. And same goes for all of the other Russians. So that results in 15, 20 guys sliding past him. He still belongs in the same tier as those guys, and maybe you pick him higher than those guys, but that was just the way that I decided to approach it with the Russians. And I think that's reflective of how NHL clubs are thinking about the Russians, who are very complicated this year, more than in years past. We obviously had the Russian factor, if you will, of the early 2000s, and it feels now very much like that has returned to the forefront after for so long it not being much of an issue. So teams are definitely thinking about all of those kinds of things, and that's going to create divergence in boards. Maybe one team feels comfortable getting Russians over here and feels comfortable with their connections over here and ranks those players like they would in any other season, and maybe another team just says, I'm not touching those kids this time around, and we'll pass and take another guy that we like. So I think it's going to be, you're going to see both of that take place, and the result for the Russians on the whole will be that they're drafted lower than where they're slotted publicly in a lot of cases, I think.
I do feel that being all fair and everything, I think we're going to see the widest array of outcomes this year. It's going to be kind of nuts where everybody lands. Mm-hmm. All right, I want to shift now to the fantasy focus here. We're looking for guys who specialize in one or more of our counting stats. So I'm wondering if you see anybody that maybe does this better than anybody else in the class. And we're going to go through, you know, different counting stats that we like to count. So who would you pin down as the guy that hits a lot?
Oh, there are a few.
I love it.
There are some that aren't even going to make it to the NHL. But as far as the kids that will, Lyon Bischel, the 6'5" defender who played in Sweden this year, he's Swiss but has played much of his career, the last few years at least, in Sweden. He's a kid who plays a very physically engaged style. Noah Warren, the big defender of the Gatineau Olympiques, is another kid who plays a very physical style from the back end. He knows what he is, and he plays into that and leans into that. I mean, frankly, it tends to be some of those bigger defensemen. I think Maverick Lamoureux, obviously the biggest player in this draft at 6'7", 6'8", has started to get that. He's still a very much a skinny, underdeveloped kid considering his size, but he started to play with a little bit more meanness. And then up front, as far as the forwards go, there are a few players that come to mind. Reed Schaefer is the big one. Reed is commonly compared to Tom Wilson. He's that kid in this draft class. There's always one in every draft class that gets those sort of Tom Wilson, Milan Lucic comparisons, and that's what Reed has had coming his way. He's the exact same size as Tom Wilson was at the same age. His point splits and penalty minute splits are almost exactly the same as Tom Wilson's was at the same age. Both are CHL players, both play a physical sort of forechecking in your face style, and then can also sort of contribute here and there offensively and have some skill. And so Schaefer's the big name as far as the forwards go. And I suspect that that physicality and that hope that he can be the perfect third liner may actually even push him into the first round. I wouldn't take him in the first round, but I think there's a real chance he goes there. And if not, he's going to be an early pick on day two. So those are the players that sort of immediately come to mind, if you will. It's tricky. There are a couple of kids, Charlie Letty at the National Development Program likes to lay the body, and he's got a chance as a defender to potentially be maybe a third pairing guy if everything goes well for him, although I would say that that's a pretty unlikely outcome for him and probably wouldn't pick him until round 6-7. So there are a few others, but Bischel, Noah Warren, Reed Schaefer, those are probably the three big ones for me.
How about anybody for shot volume?
Oh, that's a much larger list. There are a couple of really big trigger men in this draft class. Jonathan Lekkerimäki is really the natural scorer in this draft class. He's a kid who really had a coming out party as one of those trio with Djurgården. It's funny, he was actually coming into this year. Noah Oslund was kind of the big name of that three and had been given the early promotion up to the U20 team that those other two kids hadn't had the same amount of time with. And ultimately, the roles almost reverse. I think Noah Oslund will actually be the third of those kids picked this year. And you're going to see Lekkerimäki certainly as the first picked. So Lekkerimäki's a kid who shoots the puck a lot. Joachim Kemmel is another kid who shoots the puck a lot. Both of those kids are probable top 10 picks. Shane Wright can shoot the puck a lot when he's playing his game, although he played playmaker maybe a little bit more this season. Even Matt Savoy, the third of those sort of really talented wingers that's going to go at the top of the draft, is a goal scorer first. There's a lot of those kids. Isaac Howard with the National Development Program is a goal scorer shooter first above all else. Even Rutger McGrory, same kind of vibe with him. He's a mid to late first round pick. Cutter Gauthier, same thing. Worked his way into the top 10 conversation because of his ability to finish and play a power game, and he'll enter the hit column as well. Yuri Kulich is has probably the best one timer in the draft, and really can sling it from his offside on the power play and will score lots of goals from there. So there are a lot of players in this draft, but Kulich certainly has the best one-timer in the draft. And then you get into players, some of those snipers at the top, the Joachim Kemmels, the Jonathan Lekkerimäkis, those kids are going to take a lot of shots, and that's going to be a big part of their game at the next level.
Those are some of my favorite guys to have, the hits guys, the shot guys in fantasy. Those are the guys. I think we talked about maybe the pest here, Reed Schaefer, and that Tom Wilson analogy is going to get a lot of people really excited. I want to move to a power play specialist. It sounds like Kulich could be the guy for this one, but is there anybody you see that would stand out on the power play as kind of their leading trait?
Well, Lane Hutson is the very first name that comes to mind. Lane was the power play quarterback at the national program this year. He's a 5'8" on a good day defenseman who weighs about 150 pounds, might not be a first round pick because of it, and may sort of linger into day two. But he strikes me as the kind of player who can have the year that Olin Zellweger had this year, that really established Olin Zellweger, who was obviously drafted early in round two, as someone who should have been a first round pick. And I think Lane's got more talent than Olin Zellweger, which is saying a lot considering Olin is an elite junior hockey player at this level already, and was one of the very best defensemen in the CHL this year, and will likely now join Jamie Drysdale as two of the sort of six pieces of the Anaheim Ducks blue line of the future. But Hudson's going to be that. He's going to be that in college. He's going to be that in the NHL. If he makes it, he's going to be a dynamic power play quarterback who fills the stat sheet offensively and plays a very creative, clever, attacking playmaking style. So the bigger challenge, if anything, with projecting forward the true power play upside of Lane Hutson is that he doesn't have a big shot. Maybe that comes with some strength and some college reps, but as far as the vision and the playmaking and the ability to run a power play, that is undeniable, and he's going to be a PP1 guy if he becomes an NHL player. So he comes to mind as a player who leaps out in that way. Jaeger Furkus of the Moose Jaw Warriors comes to mind as another sort of smaller kid who, if he makes it, it's going to be an all-offense type who plays at the top of your lineup and plays on the top power play. Furkus had a real coming-out party this year with Moose Jaw. They were a rebuilding team for a lot of years recently and then came out of it strong this year to contend for a change, and he was a huge part of that and just an electric offensive player when he's got the puck on his stick and kind of one of those kids who's threatening. Every time he gets the puck, he seems to threaten. So Furkus is another sort of pure power play guy. Hutson is definitely that. And those are probably the two that immediately sort of leap off the page as having that kind of obvious utility. But virtually all of the kids who are going to go at the top of the draft that we've already talked about have that too. The Lekkerimäkis, the Savoys, the Kemmels. Those guys are going to be power play players in the NHL. I have no doubt about that. So, but as far as a little bit further down, certainly I'd keep an eye on Lane Hutson and Jaeger Furkus, who both could be first rounders, but I would guess are more likely to be second rounders.
Now, I noticed this year might be the first in a long line of memory that we don't have a top goalie. You know, we've kind of gotten spoiled with Yaroslav Askarov, Jesper Wallstedt, Sebastian Kosa, Spencer Knight. You know, it goes a long way back, and this might be the first year where there's no real top-end goalies. We're not going to get past these fantasy nerds without saying who the best one is. Somebody's going to draft the best goalie, and I want to know, if you had to hitch your wagon to one, who would you be looking at?
Well, I think Tyler Brennan is going to be the first goalie picked. Tyler played in the WHL and has sort of established himself as a top player, was better than his numbers this year. His numbers this year kind of hovered around 900 all year, but he played on a weak team, and he was better than that. But in saying that, I'm not a huge fan of Brennan, and I've got a final thoughts column that I've already begun working on that'll be out before the draft, where I've promised people that I'm going to touch on all of the goalies. And as part of that column, one of the things I'm going to make clear is that the two big names in this draft, Tyler Brennan and Tapias Laineinen, are actually two kids who probably neither of them would be among my first two goalies to pick. I think Laineinen at 6'5 and 230 pounds, he draws a lot of attention for how big and heavy he is, but I actually think his heaviness is likely to work against him. There are not very many. There were only three goalies in the NHL this year who were heavier than 230 pounds. Frederik Andersen has obviously always played heavy. Robin Lehner is infamously a very, very large man. But typically, it starts to become an impediment when you're that big in terms of just being a little bit slower moving out there. And I think that is absolutely evident in Laineinen's game. So probably not a kid that I'd look to, even though I like the appeal. The two goalies that I actually really like, or the one number one goalie, if I had to just name one, would be a kid by the name of Hugo Haviland, who was the star of Sweden's J20 level this year, named its top goaltender, and then followed that up by being named also the top goaltender at U18 Worlds. He made back-to-back 40-save performances in the semifinal against Finland and then in the final against USA to upset USA and kind of stun USA with how good he was. Haviland's only 5'10", probably be a late-round pick, but the track record is there. He moves extremely well. And increasingly, I think those 5'10", 5'11", 6-foot goalies that teams pass over are coming back to bite them. We see now what UC Saros is in Nashville. We see what Dustin Wolf is going to be in Calgary. I think Dustin Wolf is going to be the first or second best goalie to come out of his draft class. And he was drafted with one of the very last picks of the entire draft. So they're coming. Devin Levi, another one with Northeastern. Devin Levi is the best goalie prospect in the Buffalo Sabres organization now, and they have three good ones. So yeah, those kids, I think they often slip, but I'd keep an eye on Haviland to become the Dustin Wolf, to become the UC Saros of this draft, if you will. So the Devin Levi of this draft. So Haviland's probably the kid that would be my first goalie to target. And There's some risks, certainly. The position is still played predominantly by goalies who are 6'3", 6'4". But increasingly, I think there is value in some of those smaller kids with really good numbers who can really move in the net and play sort of an athletic, controlled style that some of the bigger goalies struggle with.
I want to take a pit stop on that Buffalo comment that you made. I'm going to go out on a limb here. I'm guessing UPL, Eric Portillo, and Devin Levi are the three that we're talking about.
Yes. And I would go now, probably the reverse order that people would have gone 2 years ago. I'd go Devin Levi, Eric Portillo, UPL.
Oh, wow. What a, I mean, I remember going through fantasy drafts and UPL was a hot commodity. And I just don't know if it's nurture or nature in Buffalo. Like
a big part of it with UPL was just injuries. He's dealt with two serious injuries. The hip for a goalie is something that nobody wants to ever run into issues with. And that he's just lost time and he's been banged up and he's been fighting through injuries for that, particularly for goalies, are very challenging to overcome. And then now that he's sort of on the other side of it and healthy, he just hasn't been good enough.
It's never too much to have a wealth of talent and goal. I want to start to dial in on some of these specific players, and we're going to start at the top with Shane Wright. Presumably we're going to guess that he goes to Montreal. What does a ceiling look like for him? Does he challenge Nick Suzuki, barring any moves, for the 1C? Maybe not as soon as next year, because going back to, I remember you say kind of a middle six to start, and I think we've both agreed that he might be a regular next year. But what does the ceiling look like for him in Montreal?
Well, I think next year, if he can be a 40-point guy, that's a win. That increasingly now seems to be the bar for top young players coming into the NHL. Obviously, McDavid and Matthews never lived or existed inside the confines of that bar, and I don't think Connor Bedard next year will either. But by and large, the players who are coming into the league are not breaking in and having 60-70-point seasons, even like the one that Matt Barzal did when he broke into the league. Pretty rare for them to come in and have an immediate impact like he did. So that list seems to be getting smaller and smaller. We always talk about the game getting younger and younger, but increasingly, I don't think that's true for the very, very top-end players, at least not at 18 years old. We are seeing a lot more success at 19, 20, 21, 22 than we used to. And that's where you're hoping that Shane really peaks. So if he can be a 40, if he can be a 20-20 guy next year as a second or third line center, I think that who gets some power play time, I think that's a success for him. And then after that, beyond that, in the prime of his career, once he is 21, 22, 23, 24 years old, the hope, I think, for Shane and the expectation for Shane should be set somewhere at 60 to 70 points. And I know that's not what you're hoping for out of a number one pick. Everybody wants the 80 to 90 point guy at that range. And maybe he gets there a couple of times over the course of his year with the right puck luck and the right line mates. But I think by and large, throughout his career, he's going to settle a little bit below that. And that still makes Shane, if Shane Wright becomes a 60, 70 point top six center, that's still a $8, $9 million player, right? It may not be a $12 million one. It's nothing to scoff at. I still think that's going to make him a 30-goal guy. 30 goals and 30 to 35 assists is a heck of an NHL player these days. So that, I think, is the sort of outlook for Shane. I just don't see him becoming one of the game's true stars, but I still think he's going to be a star in the context of his team. He's going to be a team star rather than a sort of transcendent league-wide top 10 player in the league kind of player.
I think there's some like real fascinating insulation in Montreal right now. We're looking at Cole Caulfield coming out being a real trigger, and you know, Suzuki on his own right, you know, this is going to be a pretty good team to watch.
Definitely. And they're going to be committed to the rebuild here too. So I fully expect them to have a top three, top five, maybe even first, second overall pick again next year.
I think there's going to be a ton of teams after that. There's a lot of speculation. We have a fantasy hockey Discord, and Boston, man, there's something up in Boston right now. And I wonder if they're going for Bedard the same way. Like everything's weird. Let's talk about the other two forwards at the top of the list here. Slafkovský and Logan Cooley. What do you like? What does one do better than the other? And maybe just like a pros and cons list, if you could. What should we get excited about each of these guys?
Well, strictly from a fantasy perspective, I think the ceiling is much higher on Logan Cooley than it is on Juraj Slafkovský. I think Juraj Slafkovský is an extremely talented player. He's got uncommon hands. You almost never see a player who can toe drag and handle the puck in his feet at that size, at 6'3", 6'4", who's really heavy like he already is. Like, he's already 200 plus pounds. One of the, I think he's the second heaviest player listed by NHL Central Scouting behind Bischel. So he's a huge man, and I think he's going to be engaged physically, and he's going to score a lot of goals with his hands and his sort of feel around the puck. But he doesn't have that sort of dynamic playmaking quality that someone like Logan Cooley does. I think that from a fantasy value, there's a chance that Cooley becomes the number one fantasy player out of this draft class. He's got a more physical sort of intuition to him. If you play in a league that counts hits and penalty minutes, he's going to pad both of those stats in a way that Shane Wright doesn't. So Cooley's a kid that, as far as fantasy owners go, that people should be very excited about, not only because his offensive ceiling and the counting stats and the production and the power play, that's all going to potentially be number one in this draft. But then on top of that, he also plays a pretty scrappy, feisty, physical game. He was one of the more physical players on this year's NTDP team and gets involved with it after the whistle and all that. So there's a lot to be excited about for Cooley, and likewise for Slafkovský, but I would be lower in terms of a fantasy conversation. I would be lower, maybe even much lower on Slafkovský than on Cooley, even though Slafkovský is going to give you results earlier as someone who's closer to the NHL. Although I think there's a good chance Cooley's one and done at college as well. So he'll really only be potentially a year behind Slafkovský.
Is there any chance Cooley makes it to five for my Flyers?
No, would be my answer. I think if it goes right, Slafkovský 1-2 to Montreal and New Jersey, I think the Arizona Coyotes would be crazy not to take a center. They've got wingers coming. We know they already have Clayton Keller. They've got Dylan Gunther on the way, but their cupboards at center are bone dry. If you look at their center depth, if you look up their line chart from the last game of the year this year, it was ugly. It was Alex Galchenyuk and Barrett Hayton and two college free agents, right? Like, it was grim there. So I think they it would be incumbent on them as they enter this next chapter to take a center. And I don't think it would hurt for that center to be American. And Cooley just checks that box. So I think Cooley's gone in the top three.
Yeah, I think you're right. Let's talk about these two D-men, Nemec and Juracek. What sets them apart? Are either of them going to be, you know, power play one QB? I'm looking at the top 10 teams in this draft, and it seems like only Montreal and Seattle have a real kind of vacancy in the cupboard as far as power play one quarterbacks, and everybody else, like Columbus with Werenski, Philly maybe, but the other teams seem a little bit log jammed there.
Yeah, I mean, I think Seattle is taking a defenseman. That would be the shock of the draft if they didn't for me. I'd stick my neck out on that. They, after taking Matty Beniers last year, and with the way that their pool, as small as it is constructed, it just makes way too much sense to take one of those D. My guess would be that they take Nemec. He's the sort of modern defenseman. Him and Juracek are very different players. Juracek is not a throwback, but plays the game in a more obvious sort of what you see is what you get, commanding. He wants to have presence out there. He's got a huge point shot. He's physical. He moves the puck sort of quickly and decisively. And Nemec is the thinker out there. He's the sort of, I hate to use the word hockey IQ because I think it's a bad cliche, but he's the hockey IQ problem-solving, processing defenseman who just sort of calculates his way around the ice and plays the game in a much subtler way than Juracek. So the debate on those two is fascinating because I think it reveals the kind of evaluator you are just because they are so different as players from one another. But in terms of power play upside and fantasy value and that kind of a thing, I do think that both have the potential to be PP1 guys. Juracek, with the way he shoots it, is going to immediately remind people as soon as he starts pounding them of the Shea Webbers and the PK Subbans, and obviously Zdeno Chara was that for years, where they weren't great in terms of the what we think of a power play quarterback today as kind of the general, the quarterback at the top of the umbrella. None of those guys were great at that, but because of their shot and the threat that they were as a shooter, they were still among the best power play quarterbacks in the league. And I think Juracek will be the same. He just gives a team a shot threat from the point that very few other teams have on their power play. And it gives the power play a different look than the power plays around the league. There aren't a lot of PP1 QBs who can really pound it anymore. That's not really the way that that's trending. You think of Adam Fox, et cetera, Morgan Riley. None of those guys are big shooters. So that piece of it, I think, will play in Yurochek's favor. And then Nemitz is the more classic power play quarterback that we're seeing a lot more of now. Plays a very modern style and just sort of runs the power play so effortlessly. So I think both of them have value. And if they're not PP1 guys, they'll definitely be PP2 guys. And I think both have top four upside written all over them. Again, not absolutely convinced that any will be one of the 15, 20 true number one defensemen that are in the NHL nowadays, the sort of Norris Trophy contenders. But I could see both being 40, 50-point guys, even if they're not the 70-point defensemen that increasingly we're seeing in the NHL. And those 40, 50-point D are invaluable from a fantasy perspective. So especially if you're a check and 10 to 12 of those are goals, and you're also playing a very physical brand, right? So Yurochek does offer the goal scoring and the physicality that maybe Nemec doesn't.
So I think there will be value for us in fantasy with either one.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Cutter Gauthier, he's polarizing. So here in Philadelphia circles, I'm hearing Cutter's name come up all the time. Like, this is the guy that we're going to get at five. And then I see, you know, projections that have him much later, and then others have him much, much later. Now there's a huge, the ceiling is very high on where he could wind up and the low floor. What is causing this uncertainty amongst Cutter?
Oh, well, it's a very good question. I think there's just polarizing opinions, again, because of that NTDP conversation that we had a little bit earlier. He was the winger for Logan Cooley this year. He was the trigger man for all of Cooley's skill, right? And he was very good in that role. He looks like a professional already, so I think teams are immediately impressed by that when they run into him and when they interview him. I mean, he's a 6'2" kid who's shredded and lean muscle and just looks like anybody else in an NHL locker room. He wouldn't walk into a locker room tomorrow and look skinnier than everybody else, like a lot of these kids would. Like, he would fit right in from that piece of the puzzle. And he's the modern power forward. He's the power forward who plays physical, but he's not out there to chase it. He's not out there to be the sort of menacing, punishing. He's not the Tom Wilson wannabe that maybe a Reed Schaefer is, right? Like, he plays physical and he finishes his checks, and he has learned to possess the puck more and sort of use his size to his advantage and control more. But he just plays the sort of straight line, physical, push and pop shooter style. And then on top of that, he's a very impressive skater. This was a very fast team at the national program this year, and he didn't look, despite being a bigger kid, and sometimes those kids can struggle with their first few steps and that kind of thing, he never looked slow once. So that just has people really excited about that sort of power forward package. There's not a lot of question marks around Cutter Gauthier. In saying that, though, I do think that top five is a little rich. I think there are players who are just more dynamic, more creative, better playmakers than he is. And as a result, he's more of a top 10 conversation guy for me than a top five conversation guy. And then in saying that, I would also add that I think Philadelphia, there's a real chance he'll go there. And I'm might be in the minority now. There are certainly teams that view him more as a 10 to 15 guy like I do. But there are also teams that increasingly, including NHL Central Scouting, view him as absolutely belonging in the top five conversation now. So I think Cutter's going to go very high at the draft. And it'll be fascinating to see what he does after that, because he's going to Boston, a college that is, not university. And he's going to be a center there after being a wing for most of his time. He played a little bit of center, but he was predominantly a winger at the national program. And teams view him as a center. So if he can develop some face-off prowess, maybe there's some fantasy value there for leagues that use face-offs and all that. So a very complete, well-rounded player who has impressed people a lot, both with his sort of performance at the combine physically and in the interviews there. He performed quite well in the testing and all of that. But I think he's a real, for your Flyers, I think he's a real consideration. I think Yurochek would be a strong consideration there if Seattle takes Simon Nemec at four. But if it's not Yurochek, I would not be surprised in the least at this point if it's Gauthier.
Tell me about this guy, Frank Nazar. What are some of his best, worst traits? And do you see an interesting ceiling there?
Definitely he's a ceiling play. The team that that drafts Frank is going to be making that kind of a swing. One of the best skaters in the draft, in terms of his separation gear, they joked at the program about all the breakaways he got this year. He's a speedster. That's his bread and butter. And I think the beauty of what he learned at the program and the way he developed his game was to sort of know when to use it. I did a feature on him this year, and his minor hockey coach, who is also coincidentally now a coach with Muskegon, head coach with Muskegon in the USHL, he basically told me, this is Mike Hamilton, basically told me again and again this year that, look, this kid was all speed in minor hockey. He was just always racing around the ice, using his speed to just beat everybody, turn defenders, create for himself. That was what his game was all about. And what has happened at the program is he has learned when to use it, when to slow the game down and then use a burst of speed. And all of that has become a much, much bigger component for him, just sort of playing at different paces and using his speed as an upshift or even a downshift in gears at times to really slow down when he's going at full speed. So that has really rounded out his game. But he's another kid, like Matt Savoy, dealt with a shoulder injury this year, in that sort of 5'9", 5'10", skinny, but very, very athletic build. And because of that, I just think he's going to go in the teens or in the 20s rather than in the sort of top 10, top 15 conversation that I maybe view him in. So definitely a risk reward bet. He's one of many kids going to Michigan next year, and there's only so much ice time that can go around there. So you have to hope that he's not one of the kids who ends up in a third line role and isn't playing on the power play, because maybe that messes with his confidence long-term. And there's very much a dynamic at Michigan now where there just isn't enough ice time to go around. But I think he's got the talent to overcome all of those things and become a really exciting NHL player. So worth the risk for me in the teens.
And I find that a lot is the later you get into the first round, the better the team you're going to. So it there's almost this, I almost want to say like bell curve, there's certain value to going later in the first round too, because you're on a more established team already.
Yeah, I would say that this year is a little bit weird for that. There are two teams that have three picks in this year's draft in the first round and a couple of others that have two. So there is, oddly enough, a lot of Arizona and Montreal lingering around late in the first round, just like there is at the top of the first round. So, but yeah, you're right. Typically, there aren't that many picks held by the bottom feeding teams like there is this year.
Next up, I got two guys. One, it seems like you're not sold. And then another, it seems like, this might be your favorite player of the draft. It's Christian Kyrou and David Goyette. Goyette's the guy that I'm going to ask you to hype up. And Christian Kyrou, I'm going to ask why maybe you're not sold on his ceiling.
Yeah, Goyette, like Nazar and like Savoy, one of the very best skaters in the draft. He can fly. He did. I did another feature on him that people can read at The Athletic, and he actually did speed skating as a kid. So you can see that sort of long, balanced stride that speed skaters have. He very much has that. And then now he actually runs with Nick Makrizaneris, a former 100-meter sprinter at the Olympics for Canada, and sort of runs in a sprinting club, which is pretty uncommon. You don't hear about those types of things from hockey players who are just gym all day in their off season, when they're not on the ice at least. So very unique sort of training attitude. And I think it's very much reflected in Goyette's game. I think he's a first rounder in this draft. He was one of the very best, most exciting, put whatever sort of connotation on it you want. He was one of the top forwards and one of the most productive players in the OHL in the second half, really exploded. He blew me away last year in Calgary last summer at their U18 camp that they hosted, and was just fabulous with the puck on his stick, with his speed and the way that he handles it and sort of playmakes with it. So a little bit of a disappointing showing at U18 Worlds in a third line role there, I think will likely result in him being available in the second round. But for me, Goyette's a first rounder. I think you could see him have the kind of breakout year that Philip Tomasino or Connor McMichael had after they were drafted in the late first, early second round, and then went from becoming 70 point players in the OHL quickly to that 100 point star echelon in the OHL. I think that's what Goyette's going to do next year. So lots to be excited about there. And then Kyrou is an interesting one. Obviously his brother, speaking of skaters, I think Jordan Kyrou is a top five skater in the world. Christian doesn't have that same quality though. He also plays a different position than his brother. Obviously Jordan is a forward and Christian is a defenseman. Christian's an older player in this draft class, so I think his stats and the numbers he was able to put up, a part of that just has to do with just being older. He didn't feel like a rookie in the way that other first-year OHL players did because of his age. He'll be 19 before next season starts and all of that. But Kyra is an offensive defenseman first, kind of a 5'10" gifted offensive defenseman who likes to attack and skate with the puck and be the sort of roving quarterback type out there. So there's appeal in that from a fantasy value, obviously, just because if he makes it, it's going to be as an offensive defenseman who plays in offensive zone starts and plays on the power play and gets opportunities to create and put up points. But I would say that's a long way from a sure thing with a player like Kyrou. And when we talked about those specialists earlier, he probably fits into that same conversation as Lane Hutson. I'm just of the mind that Lane Hutson's a much better hockey player. So that's where I'm at on Kyrou. I still think he's a pick for sure. He's probably a third round pick for me in this draft, maybe even late second. If a team wants to take him early second, that would probably be a little early for me.
That's going to tie in perfectly to one of the last questions I have for you. I got two more here. And the first one is open-ended. We've talked about Lane Hutson and now Kyrou. As far, like, who do you have as a late round gamble? Maybe 5 years from now has paid like crazy return on investment with a late pick, winds up being one of the better players of this class.
Well, it's hard not to say Jordan Dumé. Jordan Dumé is a kid who I think was grossly underrated by NHL scouting. I was stunned when he wasn't invited to the CHL Top Prospects game this year. He just put up the most productive age-adjusted season in the QMJHL for a draft-eligible player since Sidney Crosby. Had 109 points in the QMJHL this year. He's a 5'9" player whose stride looks ugly and as a result will be available in the mid to late rounds. But those guys just have a way of figuring that when you produce like he did this year, you are almost always going to become an NHL player, or at least you're more likely to become one than not. And that is not true for the rest of the kids that will be drafted around where he is. So his odds, at least from a data perspective, are going to look much glossier than where he's selected. And I've spent a lot of time this year and highlighted this in my top 100 with quotes from staff there. I spent a lot of time speaking with the general manager and head coach in Halifax this year, and the first thing they tell you about Jordan Dumé is he never lost a race. He was their best guy on puck retrievals. He led the team in takeaways. So all of those little things that you hope for out of a smaller player who maybe isn't the greatest skater that he's capable of still doing, he is still doing. So Dumé is probably the guy for me in terms of he's going to be a mid-round pick in all likelihood in this draft, and I think he belongs in the second round conversation. So that's one player that I would really, really keep an eye on from a pure sort of fantasy perspective in this draft. And then there are a couple more sort of a little further down my list that I would definitely consider. I think Cruz Lucius, who missed almost all of this year with a wrist injury, is a name that I would keep an eye on. He's never going to be a star player, but I would not be surprised if he was a 20 goal scorer in the NHL who also gave you more assists than goals. So maybe that settles him as a 45 point player, top nine guy who can kind of be a complimentary playmaking winger. I think that's a real potential outcome for Cruz Lucius. And because, again, he's not a great skater, and those are the guys who tend to fall, because he's not a great skater and he was injured for much of this year, and there's uncertainty about where he's playing next year. He actually decommitted with his older brother, Chaz, who's obviously a top prospect for the Winnipeg Jets. They both decommitted from the University of Minnesota. Because of all of that, he's going to fall. And he's a project, like for fantasy perspective, Cruz Lucius isn't going to be a one and done or a two and done or probably even a three and done player. Like he's going to spend his 4 years in college in all likelihood. But I think he could come out of that as a dominant offensive player in college who can be a complimentary top nine playmaking winger and maybe slot in on your second power play and give you sort of depth value in fantasy. So Lucius and Dumé are probably two kids that I would hone in on who I'm higher on than the consensus.
Last question I got for you. We're looking ahead 1 year. Who do you got in the Calder conversation?
At the end of next season or at the end of the following season?
The end of next season.
Ooh, that's a very good question.
Yeah, maybe like prospects already in systems that are going to sneak in.
Yep. I mean, Owen Power is going to be in that conversation. I think that goes without saying. Owen's going to play 23, 24 minutes a night next year and be on the power play. So I think it'll be very hard for Owen Power to not at the very least be on the ballot. I think Alexander Holtz, if he plays at the top of New Jersey's lineup and they give him true power play time, I think he could score 20, 25 goals maybe. And that these days is good enough for consideration. I think Shane Wright has a chance in Montreal just to play enough. He won't be surrounded by a ton of talent, so that will make things harder on him because they're going to be terrible. But if he can be their fifth or sixth leading scorer and score that 40, 50 points that I talked about, that probably places him in the conversation. There are a few other players coming, but I think Holtz excites me. You could see a player like a Marco Rossi enter that conversation. You could see a player like a Cole Perfetti, who I don't believe hit the games played threshold this season.
Well, Scott, this has been great, man. Thank you so much. You've been crazy generous with your time. Always a pleasure having you on the show.
Cool. Cheers, man. Anytime.
Yeah, one more time. Let's click on Scott on Twitter. That's Scott C. Wheeler. You guys can check him out on The Athletic. We got that mock draft. I'm telling you right now, that's immediately what I'm going to be doing after I get off this call, is checking out that article. So once again, man, thank you so much.
Cheers.
All right, so there you have it. That's our interview with Scott Wheeler on 22 draft class, some of the guys that are still in the system, and some Calder picks, man. That's a fun question. I think I'm going to keep that one going. If there's anything else you guys want to hear, we got Dave Hall coming on the show later this week, and some more guests next week. Don't want to spoil the surprise or anything, but yeah, if there's anybody you guys want us to talk about in general, whether it be NHL prospects or anybody from the 22 draft class, feel free to hit us up on Twitter or in the Discord. Twitter, that's FHF Hockey, and the Fantasy Hockey Discord, you guys can find it. I'm pretty sure it's still pinned to our profile, but if not, I think our DMs are open, so shoot me a message or hit us up on Twitter, whatever you want to do. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for listening, and we love you.